And now, the number one audio program that helps you to hire, get hired, and soar higher in the Salesforce ecosystem. It's the Salesforce Career Show with Josh Matthews and Vanessa Grant.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's been a 2 weeks since we've been on, but if you're listening on the podcast, it's very possible that it's been almost a month since we've been on. Super sorry about that. So super short, quick announcement. See, it's short and it's quick. We had some challenges with the download last week or 2 weeks ago. So that show is probably going to have to be redone, and we'll get that out to you as soon as possible. So apologies for that. Okay, moving forward, today's a special day. Vanessa Grant, my beautiful co-host, why don't you introduce yourself, and you can also introduce our key guest today.
Hi, everybody. I'm Vanessa Grant. I'm a product owner at a fintech and also co-host this wonderful show. I feel like it's been a long time. Maybe it's for the holidays and whatnot, but
yeah.
Excited to be back and super excited to introduce our guest, Adam Miko. Adam, thank you so much for joining us today. I'll let you do your own intro because you've got quite the journey.
a little bit, but I'll save some for the actual podcast. So currently,
this is the actual podcast. What are you talking about?
For the actual podcast question, but just a brief introduction. I'm a principal data visualization enablement and fluency at a biotech firm, let's say, and I'm also a Tableau visionary and ambassador and an advisory board member for the Data Leadership Collaborative. And just excited to be part of this and extend the community.
Yeah, and you're also a Golden Hoodie recipient, right, Adam?
Yes, I was fortunate enough to be the first DataFam member to receive that. So obviously that came as quite a shock during the Tableau keynote. So that was a pretty exciting moment. And that was at Dreamforce in 2022.
I love it. Well, congratulations. And I am curious just about Golden Hoodies in general. Do you always wear do you wear the hoodie when you go to events?
Well, it depends on the event. If it's a Salesforce audience, definitely. But if I'm going out to the grocery store, I normally don't wear the Golden Hoodie. But the best thing, and maybe not everybody knows this, it's completely reversible. So it's a black hoodie on the other side with a little gold flare in the hood portion of it.
Hey, that's not bad. I was watching the Tennessee kid. I can never remember his name. He's a comedian. He's hysterical. And he was talking about how he found these two coats at a store and he liked them so much. So he bought them both, took them home, realized it was two of the same coat and they were reversible. So at least you only have one, right?
Right. Exactly.
I don't think you're allowed to get two Golden Hoodies. Is that the case?
I think if they get damaged, you can request another one. Or if like your size changes. I have heard of people getting updated ones. So, it's not like...
I think I meant award, but okay, that's cool.
Oh, you meant award, not right. Like a second one from Salesforce. Yeah. Sorry, I'm too practical. It's like the mom in me, sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, pretty shocking. Yeah, for somebody to receive two. I'm just very fortunate to receive that one. And again, it was quite a surprise and it was a fun part of the event at the keynote that I was participating in. I thought I was going to get a t-shirt or something. No idea that a golden hoodie was being grabbed for me. So very happy about that. And washing it is an issue.
I believe it.
It's all gold lamé or gold whatever. Golden material all over it. So it's not really a machine washable. So I utilize dry cleaning if I ever need to.
Yeah, that's right.
Clean that. So that's one of the big things people ask. And the other thing is it's hard to wear at events too because it is so warm. That shield of gold makes the temperature of the golden hoodie about 20 degrees. It feels 20 degrees warmer than what it actually is. So I applaud all those people that wear them all the time at conferences. I couldn't do it because I would just be sweating the entire time.
Yeah, you're like me, man. I run hot. I just, too much, too many layers isn't a good thing. Look, let's dive right in, Adam, about Tableau, okay?
Of course.
I would think that the majority of our listeners have, some cursory general understanding of what Tableau is, but it would probably mean a lot to a number of our listeners to really describe about, you know, describe what it is and what it's capable of doing today. Because I'll be honest, my understanding of Tableau is probably 4 years old, right? And a lot has changed. And I know that for yourself at your organization, you do a fair amount with AI as well. And I'm sure Tableau ties into that. So talk if you can, just briefly, give us an overview of what it does.
Sure. Tableau is a data visualization tool, top of class, for business users. And it's a no code or low code solution to data viz. Many of the data viz tools out there require coding. Like if you're going to create data visualizations in Python or R, you would have to code for that. And other tools require quite a bit of coding, whereas Tableau is pretty easy for a lot of people to use. And there's multiple portions of Tableau that people focus on. You'll generally hear about data visualizations utilizing Tableau Desktop, but they have a cloud enterprise, not too dissimilar to Salesforce does. It connects to a whole wide range of data. There's an incorporated preparation tool that's called Tableau Prep, and even so much more. So it's an entire platform intended for enterprise solutions, and even also small businesses as well can utilize it. But it's great for both. It's a very flexible tool, and it's something I've been using for over a decade.
Over a decade. So, go for it, Vanessa.
Yeah. So Adam, can you talk a little bit more about what is data visualization and why that's important?
Because a lot of there's a lot of data out there, and it's very difficult for people to visualization really streamlines the effort as far as to gain insight and actionable insight. People can transform the data into nice bite-sized portions. I'm a fan of simplicity. I like elegant and simple dashboards that do a lot more. So a lot of interactivity and access to different parts of it. So it could be utilized by an executive, but also have value for an analyst.
So Adam, I'm going to bring up a story that, and I would love it if you could share it with the audience too. I had heard you on a podcast once talking about your data visualizations. And then when you got more involved in the DataFam community, which is very similar in a lot of ways. And I know we've even written about that as far as the similarities between the Trailblazer community and the DataFam community. But once you got more involved in the community, it really improved your data visualizations once you started kind of sharing them publicly. Can you talk a little bit about that and how, your data visualization journey?
Of course. So for the first 6 or so years I was using the tool, I was working in a silo. I wasn't part of the community. I was just trying to get reports out to stakeholders. I wasn't really thinking about best practice or anything like that. People liked a lot of color, so I just made virtually Excel versions of Tableau, if you will, with a lot of color and a lot of other stuff without an idea of what was actually good, but the stakeholders liked it. So I was fine with that. So when I joined the community, I was quote unquote already sort of a expert practitioner and tool, but my design was awful. And I didn't realize that until I received feedback from a number of members in the community, kind feedback in design and improving my thoughts about the science behind data visualization to make something really effective for end users, but make it look like it didn't take a lot of effort. So there's nothing worse than looking at a dashboard and there's 40 charts on it. You can't make heads or tails of anything on a dashboard. So it's not only making better color, creating additional white space and other stuff. You design for the user and you design to make it very approachable and something that they would actually want to go back to. So working on that for a few years, while I was still with the same employer, I was a public sector employee at the time, it really helped me improve quite rapidly. And involving the community and getting that feedback and collaborating with people really helped me understand their thought processes with it and helped me scale up really quickly. much more quickly than one could do on their own.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, I will say, I think it's something that we also do in the Trailblazer community as well, but probably not as robustly, I would say, as the data fam community. I'm a big fan of kind of learning publicly, just so people can give feedback. But I think it's not frowned upon, but people are less inclined to share their work as they seem to be in the data fan community. I've been following lots of folks on Twitter, and it's beautiful the visualizations that they come up with and the different types of data sets that they play with. And actually, if you could kind of talk about some of the kind of things like the viz of the day and things like that, which are concepts like, it's not like we have the flow of the day in the Trailblazer community, you know?
Yeah, viz of the day is really an excellent way to onboard new users to get excited about data visualization and see the possibilities that exist with data visualization. Usually it's not only an infographic design, but it's a design using new features or covering an important initiative that a lot of people are part of. So that's the other part of it is the Tableau Data Fam has a ton of initiatives. So pretty much something for everyone. Makeover Monday, which is kind of the gold standard initiative for data visualization enthusiasts using Tableau, is back. So what they do is offer a clean data set, which you generally wouldn't get in the real world. But you have the opportunity to see what many people are doing at the same time with the same data set. And that really gives you new ideas and ways to approach it. And without those types of initiatives and without that type of feedback, it's really difficult to upskill. So with Tableau Visit a Day, going back to that original question, is when you a Tableau Visit a Day is Tableau selects one viz from the community of millions of profiles and many visualizations being published a day to be featured as their visit a day. And it's done each weekday in most cases. And I was fortunate enough to get three of them. So it really does provide some recognition. Even you don't necessarily need to be an ambassador or visionary. You could have no community title and end up getting a visit a day. And getting that nod really helps people realize that they're making real good strides in their data visualization. And it's super a boost of energy when the software company that you love selects your visualization and say, hey, this is the best. And in Tableau Public in the Discover section, you could find all of the visited days in reverse chronological order. And that's a great way to look up to get really quick inspiration of new styles and new approaches of data visualization that you have not considered.
So you mentioned Tableau Visionaries and Ambassadors. Can you talk a little bit more about those programs? Because I think those are also, again, similar like the Trailblazer community where we have, you know, MVPs, and I know there's MuleSoft Ambassadors, and I'm assuming it's similar on the Tableau side, but we'd love to hear your perspective.
Sure. So back in 2020, I became an ambassador, and there's a number of different cohorts ranging from social cohorts, Tableau Public, and those are the people that publish data visualizations. There's data devs, so people that tend to work maybe on server with APIs and creating new tools and extensions that are associated with Tableau. There's the academic ambassadors, so those could be students or teachers and academics that can be part of the Tableau ambassadorship program. And there's forum ambassadors. So Tableau has an extensive forum that's curated where you could select the best answer based on questions that are had. And some people that are very active in it and help out tons of people, they get recognized as ambassadors too. And finally, there's the user group ambassadors. So people that host and co-lead impactful user groups featuring Tableau and data visualization get recognized as well. So there's specific cohorts with specific intentions. A lot of people overlap a little bit of each. Generally, one person is not in one slot, but Tableau just applies the best fit for the ambassador program. for the visionary program, it's kind of, it's a real fortunate thing to be part of, because that's where Tableau recognizes you as a global leader of data visualization. So it incorporates mastery, it incorporates collaboration, and incorporates teaching, all the things that somebody strives to be when they are really, they take a lot of value in a platform and share it publicly. If you're recognized in that manner, Tableau is saying that you pretty much mastered the tool or some great aspect of that tool. So you're doing, it's a different type of recognition than ambassador. I'm not saying one's better than the other, but it's good that they have both, because not all visionaries are ambassadors, but a lot of visionaries are ambassadors and visionaries.
Awesome.
I got a quick question.
It's been quite the journey coming all the way, you know, through Golden Hoodie to Tableau Visionary. How did you get into data analysis?
It was kind of a happy accident. So when I was working in the public sector, I was training unemployment insurance law. Sounds so much fun. But prior to that, I was a project business analyst for a couple years. And when I came back as that project business analyst, I was known as the guy that was good with Excel in my department. So they years later, they looked for a data visualization tool. And it was between one product and Tableau. And Tableau was the easy selection. And they're like, okay, let's start you out as an SME and working with data visualization developers. And then we'll hand it off to you. And fortunately, I got the reins of Tableau pretty early on in my journey. So that's how I got involved with that. And it helped me change my career after 40.
That's awesome. I hope it's not a silly question, but when you're creating the data visualization, how much, if any, thought is being put into people who are colorblind?
No, that's an incredible question. And this brings up a kind of funny story. So a lot of people like stoplight metrics, so red, green, and yellow.
Sure.
And obviously that doesn't appeal to the colorblind people. A stakeholder was colorblind, but swore he could see the difference between the red and green, which he didn't, but he just didn't want to stick out. And I wasn't really thinking about that until I joined the community. But when you're looking at pre-attentive attributes and making your data visualizations accessible, those are things you really think of right away. So I like to go with different color scales that are for metrics that are friendly to those that may have color blindness. And one way that you could utilize it and make it stand out as, you know, a positive or a negative is to have color keys there. And so you could introduce your users to that color and maybe have that as part of your brand for the entire office if you have that capability to work with a team that provides those guidelines. So instead of red-green, I tend to go with like a dark salmon and blue.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Thanks. Vanessa, you're doing a killer job talking to Adam. So I'm just going to let you keep going.
I actually was curious to hear, what are the skill sets that you think are most important for folks that are interested in this type of a career?
That's a great question. So many people come from so many different backgrounds. There's not one background that's outside of maybe data science or a business degree background that would be helpful as a background for Tableau. It's more of a desire to learn, especially the floor isn't too high because of the drag and drop capabilities of the tool. People can learn the basics pretty quickly. And there's a great community with a lot of wonderful content and tutorials and so forth that really help people upskill super quickly. So basically, you just need to have a desire and to visualize data and have a mindset for that. So understanding what is good and what is bad and working with your stakeholders and doing your research on the science behind data visualization really helps lower that threshold as far as whether you'll be a decent data visualizer quickly rather than having difficulties presenting your data to an audience that maybe isn't so familiar with data visualization. So,
yeah, that makes sense. I'm kind of curious just because it's a career show, right? And I'm trying to think, like, when someone's thinking about making a decision, right? Maybe they've got some exposure to Salesforce, some exposure to Tableau. What are some of the common traits that you have encountered with counterparts and peers and people in the Tableau community? What are some of the traits and characteristics of these folks? And also, sorry to double up the question, but you know, it seems to me like there are only going to be so many, for instance, Tableau developer roles or Tableau data scientist or Tableau visualization expert roles where that's all they're doing. Do you think in general, in business, people who are focused on Tableau are generally doing Tableau plus something else as a tool, right? Or are the majority of people working with Tableau really dedicated? That's where they live.
So I believe that it's going to be a combination of those. I think the majority of business users and developers, they're not doing Tableau full-time.
Okay.
They're part of a business team, and part of their function is to present data visualizations to stakeholders or maybe executives and so forth. Generally, when you have a larger company with a lot of different teams and limited resources, oftentimes they're going to be doing a little bit of both. And I really think that's the future. You're going to have to have some flexibility and adaptability if you plan on developing in Tableau. There will be plenty of options to be a Tableau developer and exclusively a Tableau developer, especially with a lot of consulting firms. But in the age of AI, in the age of different capabilities that people are wanting for people that are in data visualization, it's going to be a little bit more difficult in the future to just be a Tableau developer. You're probably going to need some data skills, at least some data wrangling skills, and maybe business analytics skills as well. Working with business teams and stakeholders and be part of that entire pipeline, not just a data visualization layer.
That makes sense. And, you know, doing just a cursory look on LinkedIn jobs to see, you know, how many of these opportunities, and I just did Tableau developer, how many of these opportunities are actually at consulting firms, right? Versus, say, where you work, right? Where you're dedicated full-time, versus going through an agency or going through a large employer like a Tech Systems or a Deloitte or a Tata or something like that, right? Where they know that they just need to get this person in, get us set up, and then get out. Do you see a lot of that in the industry? I mean, we see it a lot of it, of course, in Salesforce. I'm curious right. If it's really similar.
It is pretty similar. Larger firms are going to have dedicated Tableau developers, consulting firms in particular. Larger companies may have a dedicated team, especially if they're a center of excellence that's in charge of developing all the dashboards. They'll have some dedicated Tableau developers. The majority of people have a percentage of their time utilizing Tableau, and that may be. And even when I was doing it for about 6 years before I even joined the community, the percentage of the time I was doing it as a business analyst, because my career changed from an adjudication trainer to a data analyst and a business automation specialist, I would say Tableau, even at that point, was about 20 to 40% of that time. So you'll have the best opportunities to do Tableau full-time if you're a consultant.
Sure. And is it, I mean, you know, Vanessa, you tell us you did business analysis for a long time. Did you get opportunities to work on Tableau?
I haven't worked with Tableau too much. I think for me, it's been really important, at least in my consulting career, and also when I've worked internally when we've had a Tableau team, mostly to kind of figure out how to almost triage the requests from the business so that we understand when it makes sense to build in Salesforce, when it makes sense to have the Tableau team take care of it? What is the information that we're trying to, you know, what's the story that we're trying to tell, and what's the best way to tell it, and how often do they need to access it? How do they need to access it? And Adam, if you have any, I'm sure you're probably even, you know, way more about that than I do even. So if you have any thoughts on that as well, that'd be great.
So the other part of it that I didn't really get to before was that there's going to be more roles that's going to require Tableau to be part of it. So maybe 5-6 years ago when you're working with this, Vanessa, it may have been more of a nice to have. But as business teams do more with less and are required to be more flexible with what they're doing in their day-to-day, Tableau is going to be part of it. So I could see, for example, data scientists that normally would code or often code their data visualizations may have to, instead of doing that, create visualizations and share it with a broader audience, like business stakeholders, executives, and so forth, whereas they're not just sharing it amongst their team. Other roles will have Tableau thrown into it because they're the one that's probably best with any related type of software. So I just think that's going to be a function of so many different people's MO at work, where it, a little bit's going to go to a lot of people as opposed to a lot of people having full-time roles there. But I think Tableau or data visualization in general is going to be a large part of what people are going to be doing in the future. And regardless of your role, because there's going to be so many slices and dices of your job description as we go on in the age of AI, that it's going to be important to be able to understand and produce data visualizations.
That makes sense to me. I've got a kind of another silly question. Well, maybe it's not silly. I don't know, but I'm curious. You have this unique position of getting to see really the specific information that companies want the most of, right? What are the dumbest KPIs or metrics that you've done visualization for where you're like, they want to see it. I don't know why, but okay, here we go. You know, well, any stories around that?
Well, more so of having too many. So right. some people basically want a dashboard full of KPI cards and your eyes go cross-eyed. Mm-hmm. So, and there's no like filter as far as, you know, what do we want to see as a KPI? It's like, which metrics do you want? And the person says, yes.
Right.
They're all over the board here.
Yeah.
So I don't really see, because usually businesses don't produce stuff that would be like what would be a poor KPI. They make sense in their own way, I'll put it that way.
Okay.
But I think having too many KPIs make it very difficult for people to understand what's going on. And people won't actually use the dashboard or the data visualization because it's just too crowded. There's too much going on and they have no idea on what to focus on.
And is there a golden rule to that UI? I mean, is it, you know, no more than six or...
So there's no, it depends on the stakeholder. I'll put it that way.
Sure.
But generally, what I would like to see with KPIs would be what they call big aggregated numbers on top, where you have the big aggregated number and maybe a spark line or something, maybe no more than four. I think after four, it gets really crowded. And then for charting, I generally don't like more than three or four of the actual charts beneath that big aggregated number section.
Sure.
So beyond that, it gets a little bit crowded. And I would talk to a stakeholder about making multiple dashboards and utilizing the navigation buttons in Tableau to easily go between them.
There you go.
So I wanted to ask, I know you mentioned Tableau developers. But what are some of the other roles in general that folks could look for if they're interested in a career like this? And what does the career paths look like?
Oh, interesting. So my career is very different. There are a number of companies with Center of Enablement and so forth, but it's a few and far between, and it's not the easiest thing to find. So My progression was something completely unrelated to Tableau to something that was tangentially related to Tableau to something as having Tableau as part of my job. And then I became a Tableau evangelist, which meant Tableau was 100% of my job when I was working for a consultancy before I left for my current employer. However, that led me into helping lead a center of enablement for data visualization, which has really been a career path that is kind of a dream career path that I had no idea would have existed 5 years ago, let alone now. So that's still going to be a thing, but that's not like a reasonable career path for a lot of people. So usually what I would see, at least in the private sector, non-consulting sector, would be more along the lines of the business analyst or data analyst doing Tableau for a pretty extensive amount of their job, anywhere from, it could be anywhere from 10 to 50%, where they're working with data teams, getting the data prepared correctly, and then worrying about, and then applying the data visualization and iterating on those data visualizations for their stakeholders. So that's one of those things where I'm like, wow, that's a career path that's probably the most logical for most people. But if somebody really wants to do Tableau and just focus on Tableau as a primary job function, you may utilize that portion of Tableau that you're working on as a data analyst or a business analyst and look at a consulting gig that applies the Tableau or related data visualization efforts, more of a focus of your job role.
There you go. Now, you are also an author, right? You've written two books. Am I getting this right?
Wrote one and a forward to another one. One of my own, and that was for the Tableau Desktop Specialist Certification.
Yeah, tell us about that.
January this year, or last year,
rather. Last year, yeah. It's been out for a year now. You can find it on Amazon. If you just type in Adam Miko, M-I-C-O, or type in Tableau Desktop Certification or Desktop Specialist Certification, will come right up. It looks like you went through Pact Publishing, which our last guests also went through when they were creating a book about AI for Salesforce. So definitely a really good publishing company that is focused on the community that we serve here on the show. But what was that like authoring this? I mean, was it daunting, or did you feel like, how much did you lean into AI? I asked this question a couple of weeks ago. You know, how much did you lean into AI to help you out with this? How much of it just sort of flowed because you knew it? You know, what was the experience like for you?
So the funny story with that is that I took this test by accident. So when I was consulting, I was supposed to take the Tableau consultant certification, but the Tableau testing company changed sites to a different site that was only for that consultant certification. So I just blindly clicked the certification button and went to the Tableau certification, took the test and passed it. But it was a long process because I just started working for my current company in a brand new job in a brand new role. And I didn't realize how much effort that was going to be to write the book and do that. There's absolutely no Gen AI that was available for me at that time to assist in writing the book. So those words are my words, but my words. And I spent 9 months on writing and iterating on the book around my actual demanding job. So it was a lot of weekends spent writing. And it was a process. It's probably, I joke about this to friends, but it's probably the closest thing a guy could experience to having giving birth, is because I spent 9 months writing this. It was a lot of effort, a lot of pressure, a lot of energy expended, and a lot of times telling me I'm not going to get through it. But once it came out, it was such a relief, and I was just happy to have something to show for all that effort. And I really applaud Pact Publishing for pushing me along, because sometimes I just like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Sure.
It's too much work. And I was already tired from not only my day-to-day job, but my community activities with Tableau as well. in Salesforce at the time.
Yeah, you're no slouch, Adam. I mean, clearly you're no slouch, which is awesome. But yeah, I like the comparison to being pregnant. I think you'd have to throw in, for a guy, maybe throw in some kidney stones in there, right? To make it really fair.
I remember that.
Okay, so throw that in there, and then you got it for sure. No epidural for writing a book, is there?
No, and there's a lot of check-ins, and a lot of people remind you of deadlines.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of that, but without that, and it was a very aggressive deadline. I had 9 months to write, 9 months to write the book, and I had a number of breaks in between because of travel or COVID or whatnot. So it was, I was happy to complete it. And a lot of the work was done. Is fortunately at my job, we had a winter shutdown for like 9 days. So I went to Cape Cod, and it was in the middle of winter. Nobody goes there during that time. And knocked out 70 pages in that 8 or 9 days I was there.
Oh, good
so
for
that
you.
Was really helpful to get most of the final portion of it done. And it was fun to kind of take a writer's retreat. To get the great separation from work that I need, but also kind of refresh and get through that process of writing the book.
Yeah. Where on the Cape did you go?
South Yarmouth.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
A lot of my
I'm
family.
From Wisconsin. So that,
okay. Yeah. A lot of my family grew up in Yarmouth and lived there for many years. I lived in East Orleans in eighth grade just for 1 year, but we used to go there all the time. So yeah, great place.
Very cool place
for a retreat for sure. So I'm kind of curious, you got all this stuff going on. What's coming next for you?
So I'm involved with a number of things. Tableau Conference is coming up in April, so that will be a lot of fun. Speaking of next, I'm going to be releasing our Tableau Next cohort. So one of the initiatives I'm part of at with the Tableau community is representing those people that are not ambassadors and not visionaries, but deserve some accolades and recognition. So I, in December, late November, in December, I have a nomination for people to nominate others that are not Tableau employees, Tableau ambassadors, or Tableau visionaries, so they can get recognized and hopefully propel them to do more and greater things and get the recognition that will hopefully inspire other people to do the same. So this year we had our biggest one yet, where there were over 100 people that will likely qualify for being on the Tableau Next cohort. So I'll put together a blog and their information so people could follow them and get inspired by their work and hopefully get their names out there. So there's a potential for them to become an ambassador or a visionary.
Good job, man. Way to go. And there's a bunch of stuff going on. Vanessa, I'm just going to pick on you for a minute, and just so you know, we're sort of like a little bit more than half an hour in, a little bit more than that, but this is usually a good time to share events, what's going on, before people click off and go, make dinner or whatever. But you've got some stuff coming up. Tell us about that.
My stuff.
Your stuff, Vanessa. Your stuff.
Yeah, I've got stuff going on. Tomorrow, I'm doing by the time this podcast is up, you should be able to see the recording on SalesforceBand's YouTube. But I'm doing a crash course in business analysis in collaboration with SalesforceBand, which I'm only kind of freaking out about. It's a topic I can talk about in my sleep, but I think over 700 people RSVP'd. I'm like, oh my God, I wasn't expecting it to be conference level attendance. But people are really into business analysis. And hey, as we heard Adam talking about, business analysis is often a great foundation for all sorts of careers. Doing that. And then next week, I'm actually going to be speaking on a panel for the Ohanability Trailhead Community Group. Talking about my experience raising my two beautiful neurodiverse children. So a little bit more of a personal side of things, mm-hmm. but also part of that is how do I manage my career with also a lot of the responsibilities that I have in that regard.
Yeah, I don't know how you, I really don't know how you do it. I don't. You're always doing something. And I, for me, I just get burnt out, man. I just like, I don't know if it's because I'm just a little bit older or I'm just as busy as you, except it's not necessarily in the ecosystem. I'm playing drums or piano or going on the boat. So I don't really know. I don't know how you have that much energy.
I don't either. Maybe I'll be one of those like cautionary tales if I keel over by the end of the year. I don't know. But I think it's all just kind of driven by like, am I too tired or do I want to keep helping people? And I think that just kind of, I think what drives me and a lot of people in the communities that we're a part of, and, you know, supporting other parents and other people, you know, raising neurodiverse kids. If I'm getting asked, that's that's a topic that's important to me. Just like Salesforce is important to me. Just like business analysis is important to me. Just like helping people in their careers is important to me. It's a blessing that I get to do this stuff. And I think I'm also speaking on user stories at a Trailhead user group in Cotswold. I think it's in the UK next Cotswolds. Week. Yeah, Cotswold. Sorry, thank you.
So you're going back to the UK?
No. I'm just doing that one virtually. That one's a hybrid event. Okay. But that one, I believe, will also be recorded. And
I was going to say, we're going to have to get you dual citizenship here soon.
Yeah. Oh man, that'd be nice. I think those are the kind of the big ticket items I have going on lately, other than trying to get my own Trailhead community group off the ground. Hopefully I'll be able to announce my first meetup for that in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I'm stoked about that for you.
Me too. Oh, I just need the time to like, it's I think I still need to get my organization together, it's lovely. You know, it's a great time in my life, as busy as it is. You know, I keep going in large part just because the opportunities keep coming. And I want to say no, and I still, you know, sometimes push stuff off, but like, it's still on a day-to-day basis. So lucky to do what I do.
Yeah.
I'm also going to throw out for folks that are listening live or listen before the deadline, Dreamin' in Color call for speakers is out if folks are interested in speaking in New Orleans. And I'm going to be actually putting in a couple submissions for the Latina track and kind of leaning into, I don't know, folks, not something I publicize too often, but is really important. Another important aspect of my life is, you know, my mother's Colombian, and I know I don't necessarily present as a typical Latina woman, but, you know, I am, and it's a huge part of my life. So I'm going to kind of lean into that a bit as well and do some more sessions as a Salesforce professional that's also Latina.
I love it. Good for you. Good for you, Vanessa. That's awesome. And that'll be a fun place to go. I've never been to New Orleans, but I bet you're going to have a heck of a good time down there.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for asking, Josh.
Yeah. Well, I keep seeing all this stuff that you've got going on. I figured, well, we should probably tell a couple people about it. Why not?
I'm busy, but you know, I'm also here fangirling over Adam. Like, for some reason, Adam, like your content, even though, you know, the Salesforce and Tableau, I would consider like tangential. Like, of course, there's so many opportunities for synergies between the two ecosystems. You look at the Dreamforce theme was basically AI plus data plus CRM. But I've always really enjoyed, you know, listening to you speak, your blog, and your personality in general is really always resonated with me. I love I see Q's on the session that you did with Q. Like, you're really good at explaining kind of these concepts that have always been a little bit scary to me. I love data, but data does intimidate me a bit. And making that a little bit more palatable. So thank you, Adam. And actually, I would actually love to dig in a little more on since it is AI plus data plus CRM. Adam, you have a lot that you've been doing on the AI side of things. Would love to hear you kind of talk more about that.
Thank you so much for the kind words, Vanessa. And being neurodiverse myself, I appreciate you having a parent. You being a parent to neurodiverse children as well. So I do appreciate that. And the career part has always been a bit foggy for me until I learned about community. And getting back to the AI track, I'll be perfectly honest. When Salesforce puts AI in front of data, that makes me cringe a little bit because the primary thought is that you have data that feeds into the AI. Yes, and I do work quite a bit on AI, primarily on the generative AI side. I do a lot of work with that with my current company. I built several GPTs and ChatGPT and really worked with the tool quite a bit. And I've seen so much potential in what it can do. And the thing that really excites me about generative AI is not the tool ChatGPT for generalized use. It's how software is going to implement generative AI to make their software much easier to use and less scary for those people that are trying to use it. So pretty much every software tool is looking for an angle on how to do that and how to incorporate that. And the results that I've seen from a number of demonstrations and actually working with generative AI with associated software is really encouraging. And it's going to make it so much easier to use tools like Tableau or any other, and even Salesforce in the future.
Absolutely. So I have a couple of questions from the audience as well. And I also have one last question for Adam, if you don't mind me going ahead, Josh. I don't know why I keep asking permission, Josh.
Yeah, go for it.
I'd be like, done.
No, you're good. Something weird keeps happening with my system where I hit mute on my podcast box and then it mutes it on the thing. And then I don't know if the data is going into the recording. It's just being really weird. But yeah, definitely.
Well, everything's loud and clear for me now.
Okay. The only thing I was going to say just about what Adam was just describing is I'm noticing recently all of these little plugins on GPT that are making my life a lot easier, right? You can go to explore, like if you're on ChatGPT-4, you can go and click explore. There's a little button on the left column. This is just a general knowledge thing. You can click on that and it's like, yeah, here's the GPT for academics. This is the stuff if you're in college. This is the stuff if you just need general, improved writing or what have you. So if you're not on any of the generative AI platforms right now, get on them. And if you're on GPT, and I'm sure it's for the others, there's a bunch of plugins, just the same way there's a bunch of plugins for WordPress and so on, right? Or AppExchange stuff. So there's new stuff coming out every single week, and some of it's pretty exciting. Okay, back to you.
Cool. Adam, a couple questions from our audience. One, for companies using Microsoft 365, how do you position Tableau so the investment makes sense?
Well, I think of Power BI as kind of an add-on to an existing platform, where Tableau is its own top-of-market tool. A lot of companies that I've consulted with and worked with are primarily a Microsoft platform, but they don't use Power BI. And the reason is that there's a lot less flexibility with data and a lot less things that you could do. The great thing about Tableau is generally you're just limited by your creativity, whereas there's a lot of rigidity in tools like Power BI or Looker and so forth. So that's why I love, part of the reason why I love Tableau, and I think it's the premium business tool, because you're not limited by your use cases, you're limited by your creativity.
Awesome. I see Damien in the crowd giving the thumbs up. He had the question. And then his other question, and hopefully this is enough information, but how do you deal with stakeholders needing data that requires manual input?
That's kind of the bane of my existence in some cases. Generally, the best way to look at it is you have to explain the importance of working parallel. So maybe for a POC or an MVP project, you may just want to say, hey, you could utilize this data that utilizes manual inputs, but for a long-term solution, you want to get it into a data warehouse where the data is structured and is going to be dependable. Because when you have data that is manually input, there's so many potential errors that impact the front end. And not just Tableau, pretty much any data visualization tool. it's really easy to make a date field a string field, and that could impact everything, or a measure field into a string field just based on a bad user input. And those things have a significant impact, not just for data visualization, but if you're just pulling data out. So you want to have a solution that's structured and dependable, and it's going to be something that you could utilize and not have to worry about it. So with an engineered product, you could kind of set it and forget it and not have to really worry about the data and its structure ever again. When you have those manual inputs, those headaches occur daily, if not more, or maybe weekly if you're lucky.
And I know you obviously wrote a book on the certification. What are the certifications that you would recommend for folks that are interested in a career in Tableau, and how important are they for landing a job?
So primarily the first one I would say is the desktop specialist. The reason why I'm saying that, it's not just because I wrote a book on it. Part of the reason why I wrote the book on it is you have a license that is never expiring. That license doesn't expire. All the other licenses are two-year licenses, which is really good for re-education. But if you want to commit time and effort and make sure that you have a certification that lasts forever to help you get jobs and you have to worry about recertifying, desktop specialist is the way to go. Recruiters are looking for anyone with certification because oftentimes the recruiters don't know Tableau. So they want to look at people with at least a baseline certification if a Tableau is a primary aspect of the role that they're recruiting for. They have other ones that are for consultants that are publicly available too. So there's the consultant desktop, which is developing data visualizations in Tableau. And there's a consultant for server, so understanding the administration part of the data visualization enterprise environment, whether it be cloud or server. Those are important too, but they expire in 2 years. And there's also a data analyst one that utilizes not only the cloud server and desktop, but it also looks at Tableau Prep 2 and some other bits. And that's another two-year certification. So it depends on what role you're looking for, but I would say for an entry-level role related to Tableau, I would suggest to get the desktop specialist, especially if you don't have a lot of money or time to retake test. And that's the cheapest one as well. So that one is $100, and I believe the others are a couple hundred.
And let's hope, Adam, that it doesn't take people 9 months to study what took you 9 months to write.
So my intent when I wrote the book was trying to get people skilled up enough so they could pass that certification and really get to work with the examples that are provided in the book for hands-on work so they can open it and know what they're doing, at least at a good intermediate level before they actually have a career in it. So hopefully the intent is in 2 weeks, you'll be at least close to an intermediate level with building the building visualizations with the tool, but also understanding what's needed to start out in Tableau.
Awesome. And I noticed that at one point you also had the Salesforce CRM analytics certification. Can you talk a little bit about the difference between Tableau versus CRM analytics and why people might focus on one or the other, or if they should be focusing on both?
So that was interesting. So when I was a Tableau evangelist, one of the things that was being looked at is how do you incorporate anything from the Salesforce ecosystem in a Tableau? And one of the things was, at the time, it was called Tableau CRM and Einstein Analytics. And it was important for me to be able to find ways to include different types of data, utilizing predictive analytics as part of the Salesforce ecosystem. So that includes Tableau and Salesforce. So my role was understanding it well enough so I could incorporate those models into Tableau.
Okay. And do you find that people tend to choose one or the other?
They're very different. And I don't think for a period of time there, I think I was the only one certified in both.
Oh, wow.
at least anybody put their Salesforce ecosystem, because it's part of that actual cloud and it's a completely separate product from Tableau. So most people utilizing Tableau would not use CRM or Einstein Analytics, but it does have some value. And the best use case I could think of when I was working with it quite a bit is that Einstein Analytics is really good for showing the potential, what's the outcome for an isolated record. So I need to make a sale. What's the percentage of chance that this sale would be made if I contact this customer? Whereas with Tableau, you could utilize more data points and look at aggregations a little bit differently that you couldn't do on the Salesforce side, or it doesn't do. And it's intended to work that way. Salesforce are for people that's working with specific people and not looking at aggregated records. But in Tableau, you could do that. And that would be the best use case for Tableau. And I see a lot of value there, but people aren't really incorporated in that at this point.
Interesting. We have one last question from the audience. As part of the community, how do you find organization looking for support? Do you volunteer?
Looking for support in relation to?
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
I think it means kind of like how do you find a company that's looking, I don't know, maybe it's kind of like in Salesforce when a lot of times when people are looking to break into the ecosystem, they say you should volunteer or do internships to try and break in. Is there something similar on the Tableau side where folks do like internships or there's volunteer opportunities for nonprofits? Yeah, I think I got a thumbs up there, so I think I'm on the right track.
Okay, sounds good. So Tableau used to have the Tableau Foundation, but that's been rolled up in Salesforce. The best way to get involved in quote-unquote volunteer is to participate in the community initiatives that Tableau has. And the data famine Tableau is very active in social media. So supporting others, working with others, there's many opportunities for mentorship, for example, or people that provide informal mentorship. So you have a lot of opportunities for support. And if you're really part of the community and you're active in the community, you'll have a lot more opportunities to get noticed and recognized by potential employers and have fun doing what you're doing, not to mention the upskilling part of it. So very much like the Trailblazer community, where you share your wins, share your losses, and work with others looking to elevate others and not just yourself. That's kind of the mindset of the community. But utilizing that mindset, we support so many people in the community that people that aren't necessarily ambassadors or visionaries, many people are just brand new as well. So we do offer community support to people that's very family-like. And we call ourselves a data family because we mean it. It's really a thing to be part of. And I was a person that didn't want to be part of any community ever, being autistic. And I was just like, I love this tool. You know, I guess I'll give this community a chance. And I'm still here. And it'll be 5 years in August.
Adam, I gotta say something here. First of all, I think it's incredible what you've been able to accomplish. Being neurodiverse, not that that's some sentence, right? In many ways, it can be a gift. So I congratulate you on all of your success. So that's fantastic. And I'm also with you. I'm not Mr. Community. I mean, I am now for Salesforce. Sure, I love it. I love this community so much. But if you had caught up with me for my first 45 years, you know, I'd be like, I don't want to do that. No, thanks. You know, I'll go do a speech here and there. But it's such a different community. I mean, this isn't like joining a frat or a knitting circle or anything like that. Not that it couldn't be like that, but it's so different, so much richer, so much more fulfilling, and so much broader than I think anyone could have, well, certainly I could have ever imagined or guessed. So it's pretty awesome stuff, man. Really awesome. Can I ask you about career stuff for a second?
And then, of course.
Then we'll probably give some announcements, announce some jobs that we've got over at salesforcerecruiter.com and some things like that. But I'm kind of curious, Like, was there a moment, like, so many people, so many Salesforce admins are the accidental admins. And I imagine it is not dissimilar for people who are involved, at least partially, with Tableau. Would you agree? It's sort of like, oh, you better go learn this business system because you're going to need it. And we just added it, that kind of thing. Do you see that a lot?
Yes. Most of the people that are working at my work place are more or less accidental Tableau developers. And that happens. But the thing is sometimes even if those types of accidents happen, you may fall in love with that particular accident. And that kind of happened to me as well. As you know, as part of a job that, you know, I would think would be interesting for a couple minutes and I would get bored of, but it was something that really drug me in and made me want to do more and just ride or die with the particular tool and platform.
Yeah, baby. I love it. And then when you think about some of the hoops you've had to jump through to advance your career, and to, you know, join new companies. I think you've been where you are now for a little more than 2 years. I can't recall, but somewhere around there. You know, was there a moment in your career hunt or, you know, between jobs or not necessarily between jobs, but while actively pursuing jobs that you felt like this is a moment where that was the difference maker, a thing you said, a thing that you shared, a connection that you made?
Great question.
In sort of this fabric of your career, like what, like where's the golden thread in here?
For the
golden hoodie guy.
right. So the first part of it is when I had access to the tool and started working with Tableau itself, I knew it was something that could potentially change my career trajectory because I was at a dead end where I was. I was probably going to retire as an adjudication trainer. And that would have been all well and good, but it wouldn't have been fulfilling. So it gave me hope that I could do something different and have a different pathway, even though I didn't go to school for that. I went to school for political science. But as long as I do it, maintain ownership of it, things could happen. And more happened when I was part of the community and became myself and more outgoing and grew my network with the community. So on LinkedIn and X now, X Twitter, I call it. It gave me more opportunities where people would reach out to me because I was known in the community for doing that thing that they're recruiting for. So there are a lot more opportunities that came my way. And every once in a while, you get the opportunities that you can't pass up. And that was the opportunity I had to leave the public sector after 22 years and become a Tableau evangelist for a global consultancy. And the other one was landing the role in a brand new department at that time with my current company. So those opportunities don't come up too often. I consider myself super fortunate. But if you're out there and you're genuine and you're really looking to not only help yourself, but help others, oftentimes good things happen. So I'm proud to say that that was part of it is because of the efforts made, not looking to find a new career, but sometimes when you do things for the love of it, new career and new opportunities find you.
They really do. I mean, just I only have to look at Vanessa's career in the last 4 years, 3 years. Anybody can look at her as an example of that. Of what happens when, you know, how do you go from whatever 1,500, 2,000 connections on LinkedIn to, I don't know what you're at, 15,000, 13,000 right now, speeches all over the place. I mean, it happens. Like it really does. It happens. And it's like our little version of becoming a rock star in our community, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
You know, and I was thinking about what you just said here, Adam, about, you know, you only get a handful of these moments in your life. And that reminds me of a conversation I had with a fella named Dr. Jim Baker. And Jim is just a really interesting guy. He's the head coach for the senior tennis championship national team of Slovakia. He was the head tennis coach for Florida State. He's written two books, the most popular books on marijuana investments. He's got a thriving company that he's had for over 50 years. And he's just one of the neatest guys I know. He just like whatever he's doing something and he doesn't quit. He's got a lot of a lot of focus, a lot of attention, and a lot of energy. And we were standing on his dock about a month ago, and he was telling me a story about someone, a young man that he's mentoring. And he was trying to explain to this young man how important it is to pay careful attention to those four or five moments in your life that require an important decision, right, around your career. And so now I've, you know, I'm thinking about that all the time. Like, what happened here? I got laid off there. And what happened then? It wasn't a decision, but what did I do with that result? And how much of an impact that made on my future in a positive, in, you know, in a really positive way. So I think it's not a bad thing to just request our audience or suggest to the audience listening, go back, see if you can find two. Are there two moments in your career, even if you're only 30, right? Are there two moments in your career, three moments in your career where you're like, wow, that's the thing that made the difference. And what can we do to pay attention to those moments when they do arise? Because they do arise and we generally aren't always looking for them, but there they are, right? And we've got to take action. Do you cower? Do you shun it? Do you feel overwhelmed? Is it not the right thing? Is it not the right time? Just like you choosing to author a book right when you're taking on a brand new job. That's pretty ballsy, man. That's pretty ballsy because everyone listening has worked at a new job and they all know what the first few months looks like. It's the hardest. It's the hardest stuff. Right?
I'm living that right now.
Yeah, I know you are. In a serious way, you know, you're having to make up for four or five other people. Like it's a busy life you've got right now. So just something I wanted to put out there for people to think about based on what you just shared, Adam. It's really good input. Everyone, you've been listening to the Salesforce Career Show, and it's brought to you by the SalesforceRecruiter.com. I want to highlight a couple interesting opportunities to you right now. One is for a nonprofit consultant. This would be a nonprofit Salesforce consultant. You'd be working at a, you know, fairly small, like less than around 30 people in this organization. We love this company. We've actually been responsible for placing about 1/3 of their personnel there. They care about family. They care about life balance, work-life balance. You won't be overloaded with, you know, 7-8 projects at a time. It's generally one or two, right? And some of the nicest, sweetest, kindest, most helpful people that you could imagine sharing your work life with. So if you're interested in that, be sure you reach out to Stephen Greger. That's Stephen with a V at thesalesforcerecruiter.com. We also have a really interesting opportunity coming up here, which is for a CRO. So it's a CRO for a well-established Salesforce SI practice. If I said the name, and I'm not going to, you would be like, oh yeah, them, right? So you could expect OTE somewhere in the 350 to 450, maybe 500K range of compensation. So you've got to come with some real expertise in leading sales teams to sell Salesforce consulting services and be relatively connected in the ecosystem as well. So if you're interested in any of those, definitely check it out. And that's all I wanted to share on this side. Vanessa, any final questions for Adam as we wrap things up here?
I think mostly just to piggyback off of what you guys were talking about a little earlier, you know, being a part of the community and also talking about opportunities that presents. I think us all being here together today is a part of that. You know, Adam's work in the community caught my eye. I fangirled a little when I ran into him in his shiny golden hoodie. Hopefully he wasn't overheated when I ran into him at Dreamforce 23. From there, we kept in touch and met up and collaborated on a blog post of his. Then he ended up on Q's Trailhead Community Group for Women in Tech in Pakistan. And now he's here. And I think it is part of that, you know, reaching out to other folks that inspire you and being out there and sharing your knowledge can keep bringing on additional opportunities and connections. And that's, you know, I think that's what makes these communities special on the Trailblazer side and on the DataFam side. It's lovely.
It really is. Thanks for sharing that. Adam, can we expect to see you at Dreamforce this year?
I definitely will be at the Tableau conference this year. due to the resources at work, I'm unsure whether I'll be able to go to Dreamforce, but that's something I hope to be able to get to. So, but also looking forward to participating in other Dreamforce related events that a couple of people on here kind of know about that we'll share later. But that we'll keep you posted on that. And that's something exciting I'm working on that will transpire later this year.
Very good. And Peter Ganza has got his, I almost said it wrong, Peter. You've got your hands up.
Give me a high five.
Go ahead and go ahead and pipe up, Peter.
It's okay. Thanks, Josh. And, great stuff, Adam. This was a really good podcast. Speaking of community and what Vanessa just discussed, I have the weirdest thing happen. I think it was about a week ago. This gentleman who's on the podcast reached out, and it turns out he was talking to Vanessa. I don't know what that woman's thinking. And, about jobs and whatnot. I'll actually let him pipe up in a second. Anyway, long story short, his name is Petar. It's a very common Croatian name. Actually, my legal name is spelled Petar, like P-E-T-A-R. Sorry, Josh, if you had problems with my last name.
I've got it, man. I got it. Petar. Okay.
Anyway, we ended up just connecting, and it was through Vanessa. He's watching the podcast or listening to the podcast. I invited him to the show here, and if you can, maybe just give him a second to pipe up and thank Vanessa.
Of course, Petar. Let's make sure that you're added as a speaker here. So I'm sending the invite out. It should pop up any second now. Let's see if that worked. We really are going to have to figure out something about this X thing. Okay, there we go. Petar, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course. And Peter shared that, maybe just tell us, what do you do and where do you live and what's going on?
Yeah, so I'm here from Gilbert, Arizona, part of the Talent Stacker program. That's where I kind of saw Vanessa Grant and then heard that she just does this podcast. So, always try to listen in and get little gems from you guys that are veterans of the ecosystem, because I'm trying to break in myself.
Good for you.
I'm trying to get into being a Salesforce admin. So I saw that Peter was one of the guests on the show, and I was like, that's interesting, because I was like, I looked him up, and I'm like, okay, wait a second. I was like, he spells it this way, but I think that's probably just more like the English equivalent for his name. He tries to keep it easy for folks that don't speak Croatian. And then
right.
I scroll down on his profile. I'm like, maybe I'm wrong. So I'm like looking through and then I see, okay, native. I see like languages spoken. I'm like Croatian. I'm like, okay, there it is. That's where the connection is. I knew there was something there.
There you go.
So I reached out to him and said, hey, I thought I was only the pet that only pet that here in the ecosystem, but I guess that makes two of us. So that's where that kind of special connection is, because there's not very many Croatians that I see, at least.
Yeah, there aren't
ecosystem.
Yeah, there aren't. I mean, I'm close friends with a good friend of mine. I've known him for a long time. He's from Croatia, and he played basketball in Connecticut through college. And he's 6'8", like a lot of you guys. He's a big boy. He's a big boy,
nice.
And he's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. So, well, welcome to the show. Welcome to the community. And anything that we can do to help support you in your journey, that's what we're here for. So don't be shy and feel free to reach out. Speaking of which, Adam, it might be a good time now to share with everybody how they can follow you and stay connected with you. I'll just share your LinkedIn real quick. It's linkedin.com/IN/. By the way, that's the convention for the domains, no matter what. And it's Adam Miko, AdamMico. So go ahead and follow Adam here on LinkedIn. And how else can they best stay in touch with you or follow some of your blogs and what you've got going on, Adam?
Sounds good. And before I share that, I just want to thank both you and Vanessa for having me on the show. And Vanessa knows full well that I fanboyed as much as she may have fangirled over me, over her. So it was a match made in Dreamforce heaven. But you could follow me on X as well, and it's at AdamMico1, AdamMico1. And my blog is on Medium, and it's simply Adam Miko. So it's pretty easy enough to find. Generally, most of my content goes out to LinkedIn related to what I do. So it would be more along the lines of generative AI. I built a couple GPTs. The funniest one was Janet. If you ever watched The Good Place and you wanted to get personas, Janet personas to respond to your request, I built one that kind of captures the main four personas.
Not a girl.
So you could ask, you could request a specific Janet to respond, but it defaults with Good Janet.
Oh man, and, I want some of that. I'm definitely hitting you up on that. I used to wear a shirt that said "Not a robot, not a Janet," whatever it was. Yeah,
exactly.
That's great. That's great. That's a fun show. I love it, man.
Yep.
Terrific, Vanessa. Any final thoughts or any final queries or questions from our audience today?
No, I think this has been a great show. I'm so grateful that that Adam's here.
Yeah, it's really been terrific. Adam, you're always welcome back. I'm not sure if you were able to listen to the last podcast we released, which was looking back on 23 and predictions for the future. So I hope you don't mind if I just kind of leave the show here with asking you a question about what are your predictions? I know we're it's the last day of the first month. We've still got a long way to go in 24. But what are your predictions for the Tableau community, anything related to Salesforce, anything related to careers, and anything related to AI?
So I think Tableau is going to be quite enabled with generative AI in the near future. It's exciting to see the process of what they're doing. Obviously, there's not a lot I could share on that, but there's a lot of good things happening with the Tableau ecosystem related to generative AI. And also, obviously, with the Salesforce ecosystem, too. I just worked on a Pulse pilot, which is a new generative AI and metrics feature for Tableau as a customer, and love what I saw and the potential there. So there are so many exciting things that will make our lives easier with generative AI. So I don't look at it as a threat. I look at it as an opportunity to do stuff we actually like doing rather than the mundane tasks that we generally do and want to avoid when working with specific tools. So the future part that makes me most excited is the possibility of doing things that I'm passionate about, and having more of the generative AI stuff deal with stuff that I don't really care about.
Perfect. And Vanessa, any final words, final thoughts?
No, I am good. This has been awesome. Good. Thank you.
Okay. All right. No, all right.
So much pressure.
Fantastic. Adam, thank you so much. Listeners, thank you for joining us. Please go ahead and make sure that you're subscribed. If you're not, you might miss a really critical and amazing program. Also, give us a thumbs up if you can. If you felt that this was a good program and or you've liked past episodes, that does a lot for the algorithm. So we appreciate that. Thank you for that. And we'll be back in 2 weeks. Same bat time, same bat channel. This cast should release, we're hoping, next Tuesday or next Wednesday. So if you missed any of this, you can check it out. All you got to do is type in Salesforce Career in or Salesforce Career Show if you want to type in three whole words. On just about any platform that hosts podcasts. Thanks, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Bye for now.